All right, good morning, folks. Thank you all for joining us so promptly. We're set for a two-hour meeting. We'll take whatever time we need to get through this. We are going to make an agenda adjustment I'll talk about in just a few minutes, but before we get there, we have to take care of the mundane, and that starts off with roll, not Brandy. Brandy's never mundane, but with the roll call. Brandy?
Judge Conklin.
I'm present.
Ms. Fleming.
Present.
Judge Getty.
Please let me know today. She's not able.
Thank you, Judge Fannin. Judge Gabe.
Good afternoon, I'm here.
Thank you, Judge Kelly.
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you. Judge Large.
Present.
Judge Merrifield. Judge Reinhart. Judge Sachs.
Here.
Judge Reinhart is present.
Got it. Thank you very much. Judge Siebert?
I don't see him on.
Nope. I'm going to mark Ms. Bartleson is absent. Ms. Cameron?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Finke?
I'm here.
Mr. Kim? Mr. Landry?
I'm here.
Ms. Levere?
Here.
Mr. Riley?
Here.
Mr. Rule?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm present.
Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw?
On behalf of John, he's in a meeting with the chief today, so he sends his regards, but he's unable to be here for this meeting.
Thank you. And Mr. Theodorovich?
I'm present.
And our liaison member, Judge Callum Carrion?
I'm here.
Thank you very much.
All right, excellent. So thank you all, folks, to what I'm sure is going to be a very, and welcome to what I'm sure is going to be a very productive meeting. Just the one more, also mundane item, not that they're not important, but to approve the minutes of the April 22nd, 23rd, in-person meeting that we had. Is there a motion?
Lush, you make a motion.
Thank you very much. Second?
Yamasaki
second, moved and seconded. The minutes be approved. As is our tradition, objections to that? Hearing none, the minutes are approved unanimously. And Brandy, as I understand it, there were no public comments, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So folks, this is again one of our more important agendas, not that the others aren't, but this is where we move forward or attempt to move forward. All the allocations are going to be addressed in the 23-24 fiscal year approved by the council in July. So remember, that's our backstop. We have to have this through JBBC and through the council for July allocation. That being said, I have already been made aware this morning of some perhaps focus on item number 7 and thoughts related to item number 7 and methodologies and allocations within item 7. So let's just jump right there. So we have plenty of time to chat about this. I'll give you all a minute, but item 7 is in your materials. It begins on whether or not what page number you're looking at, but if you're looking at the hard copy materials, the bottom right-hand corner, it's page 53. I think as you look at the items you have in front of it, I think it's a couple pages off of that. But I'm going to turn first to Zlatko, just to give us a little bit of an overview and a sense of how we move through this. And then Oksana, as always, will present the nuts and bolts of it, and then we'll open it up for discussion.
You know, thank you, Judge, and good afternoon, everyone. The budget, as it is in progress. And so with any of the work that we're doing here, it's in the context of what we know is in the budget and making our best efforts to develop allocations so that courts can plan. I mean, that's a very important part of this too. And that's why we do this work early. The May revision is expected to be released next Friday. And I think with all of our allocations, These are all, any of the items that are before you are based on an assumption that these funds at the levels that they're in will be in the budget. And so that's the work we do. And with that, though, I think there's always an opportunity for discussion and debate. That's why we have the committee process. As Judge Conklin has indicated, there's some, you know, some thoughts about a particular part of the item seven as it relates to civil assessments. And I think, as we always encourage, this is why the committees exist, to have debate and discussion, to come to the best, you know, conclusion for the trial courts, for the branch. You know, our focus is often on ensuring that we secure the best appropriation that we can get for the trial courts. And once that appropriation is secured, then how those funds are divided amongst the trial courts is part of what TCBAC does. And I expect that to be part of today for any of the allocations. But I know we've already heard that there's some folks have some different thoughts and ideas, questions about that particular portion. And so again, we welcome the debate. It is what we all collectively want. I know that's what Judge Conklin is looking for, and Rebecca, that there are healthy debates about any of these if there are questions. And so it might be that coming out of the conversation, we need to reconvene an FMS and come back to TCBAC. But we'll let that evolve as the discussion goes. And I don't know, Judge, if you wanted anybody to say anything sort of as a preface to Oksana going through the materials.
Let's just have her do that, but I'll make that same comment. So having been on this committee for a while, as many of you are, I would ask a couple things we keep in mind as we work through both this allocation methodology and all of them. Some of our core principles, and I was talking with Chad about this earlier and with Rebecca about this earlier. One, equity, obviously, and the other is lack of volatility, obviously. And we try to, as I think Chad was reminding me earlier, we try to balance, keep those two in play, yet consistent with each other. And that might be part of our discussion today. I'm also impressed with the fact that these committee members continue to not look at their own individual numbers and their own individual courts, but the statewide impact of these decisions. And so while at times, you know, your own numbers might be impactful, and I'm not saying we can't chat about that, the grace and the strength of this committee is recognizing that the overall allocations, both equity, stability, and fairness, are what's most important. With that, Oksana, if you could just give us the nuts and bolts of item seven, and then we'll get into our discussion.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, a senior analyst with Budget Services. Item seven of today's agenda, and for your consideration, is the preliminary 23-24 trial court allocations for the base, discretionary, and non-discretionary programs from the Child Court Trust Fund, TCTF for short, State Court Facilities Construction Fund, and the General Fund. These include recommendations from the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, funding proposed in the Governor's budget, and workload formula allocation methodology approved by the Judicial Council. The 23-24 Governor's budget includes $5.3 billion in operating and facility funds for the judicial branch. The proposed budget reflects funding to maintain critical programs and services provided by the branch to advance access to justice for all Californians. The proposed budget includes $47.1 million ongoing general fund to provide a 3% funding increase. Based on prior year's business practice, the allocation of the $74.1 million will be provided as a 3% increase over each trial court's 22-23 workload formula allocation. Attachment 7A on page 57 details the R&E committee recommendation on TCTF allocations for various programs. This attachment is broken down into sections. Columns E, F, and G represent approved allocations from 22-23. Columns H, I, and J display the requested allocations for 23-24. And columns K, and L represent the dollar and percentage change respectively from current year to budget year. The bottom section of Attachment 7A also provides two summaries of the total allocations displayed cumulatively by each office and by each TCTF program. Next, Attachment 7B on pages 58 through 60 provides details on recommended TCTF preliminary allocations displaying base, discretionary, and non-discretionary programs from the TCTF in amount of $3 billion in column AG, including total TCTF base allocation in the amount of $2.459 million in column U. This document includes allocations from the workload formula and is used to assist courts in breaking down their various allocation categories. Next, attachment 7C on pages 61 through 63 details the 23-24 workload formula allocation information of $2.5 billion with the total by court in column AA, and provides the workload formula need and funding percentage should all proposed funding be finalized in the 2023 Budget Act. The materials also include TCTF fund condition statement, which shows that the fund is projected to have the necessary resources to support these requests. The information is outlined in Attachment 7D on page 64, with a projected fund balance of $205.1 million at the end of 23-24, included in row 27. Of this amount, $100.3 million is restricted and $104.8 million is unrestricted. The recommendations presented to the TCBAC for consideration are listed on page 56 of the materials, contingent on the proposed funding being included in the enacted 2023 budget. Please note that since these are preliminary allocations, some modifications may be necessary based on future state revenue projections and priority changes. That concludes our presentation. Judicial Council staff are on the call to assist in answering questions committee member may have. Thank you.
Oksana, thank you so much. So it is now open for discussion with the recommendations. I am impressed with the allocation percentages. I would note that no court is below 92%, but candidly, there does appear to be some spreads, but I think we can't also lose sight of the fact that we're in much better shape than we were in years past. That being said, I've seen hands up already. Chris and then David.
Yes, thank you, Judge Conklin. Yeah, thank you. And so really appreciate all the work that's been done on this attachment 7. Obviously, a lot of work's gone on to it, including by the committees. I really appreciate that. And I think I'm going to open up the whole civil assessment reallocation discussion, redistribution. And so I would ask you to bear with me because I think there'll need to be a little bit of a wind up here before I make the pitch. And so continuing the baseball metaphor. So when I reviewed this, and I'm looking specifically on, I think it's page 62, attachment 7C, and 62 of 68, and looking especially at columns S, T, and U concerning the civil assessment redistribution. And so, in looking at this, I was struck, and what I did, I actually asked my CFO to create a chart comparing the fiscal year 2022-23 civil assessment redistribution amounts to the fiscal year 23-24 amounts, and the variations I found to be striking. There were some courts, their allocation increased by as much as over 500%. Number of courts.
You mean the allocation from the civil, not their overall allocation, but from the civil assessment?
From the civil assessment. Right. Yeah, we're only talking about civil assessments here.
Exactly.
Now.
Thank you.
And so, and other courts saw big, big decreases, and you know, as high as 69%. And so, to me, I was just struck by that variation, and to me, that speaks to the whole issue of volatility. And so I am prepared to, I have a specific proposal here to make, but I think my first question, so the concern with, again, is, again, volatility, but the question before that is, just want to make sure I understand how the workload formula was applied, in this case, to yield such dramatic increases and decreases from fiscal year 22-23 to fiscal year 23-24.
So I'm going to turn to Chad for that, but to answer your question directly, it was applied exactly the same way it was applied last year. Now, okay. With that being said, keep in mind that there was some impact to civil assessment backfills, including the fact they were reduced by $10 million for this year. But Chad?
No, I think that's right, Judge. I mean, I my understanding is that I may have to defer to Zlatko, but I think with the $10 million decrease in the civil assessment backfill, and then there was an additional decrease for the, I'm blanking on the term, but the debt obligations. I think the entire amount went through the workload formula. Is that right, Zlatko, the whole 100 million, or was it only a chunk of the 100 million that went through?
And I'll look to Brandy to back me up too, but in essence, after you drop from 110 to 100, we already know that the 48.3 remains as part of the workload formula process, so that was not considered. And then you had the debt obligations removed. You get about $46 million left this year. And so that was run, again, 50% to the courts under the funding average, and the remaining 50 to the rest. And the big factor that's changing this is the workload formula's underpinnings of filings. And so there were changes in filings that have driven where people are relative to that funding level. And so it's a combination of all those things, reduced funding and then the updated needs in the workload formula is what was done. Right. The same as what was done last year, but with updated filing data, which adjusted everybody's needs.
So updating filing data and reducing the allocations down.
Yeah, and all the other particular changes that happens in the model otherwise, you know, new salaries and all of that.
Yeah, and just to add, if I can, so when you're considering when we run that first 50% through the model and we're starting from a different point because the need did change, we focus that first 50% on courts that have the highest need, how far they are away from the statewide average, as well as their size. So there are some variations, again, within that first 50% that impacted the outcome of how this allocation came out.
So Chris, does that at least
I just want to add is that it's not as if it's, you know, we've had definitions of new money. This was a conversation that we had with the chairs of FMMS as to how to present this material to you. So while per standard definitions of new money going through the workload formula, what to do with this money, it was reapply the 50-50 approach. Again, subject to debate and discussion by this committee. And if there's, again, desire to revisit and do otherwise, then you have an FMS to do that too. But I just want to make it clear, we were applying the methodology as discussed. And if folks have concerns about the outcomes, those are, again, open for discussion.
Absolutely. So nothing changed from the way we applied it last year, Chris. But I recognize, too, the volatility might appear a little bit striking as we look at those numbers. I know David had his hand up, and I wasn't sure if Chad wanted to add anything. David, did you have a comment?
Yes, thanks very much, Judge Conklin. And my comments relate specifically to this item as well. And just to kind of emphasize the statement that you started out with, is that we make decisions in this body that are not necessarily going to inure to the benefit of our respective courts. It's really for the whole. And I'm speaking to this item because this is a true indication that we are not thinking about our individual courts. And I'm going to highlight myself from Orange, that it shows that Orange is probably going to be the largest beneficiary of the civil assessment distribution. And that did catch my eye. And I was a little concerned about some of the methodologies that were used and how that was going to be calculated, because it does create a couple of issues. One, of significant swings in some of the jurisdictions, and it may be because of the funding elements that drive the funding methodology, filing elements that drive the funding methodology. But I recall the basis for how the monies were going to be distributed from this pot a little bit differently than what I think we're seeing here. And it may ultimately be what we end up doing in the end, but I do think that perhaps additional conversation might be helpful so that we can dig in a little bit further into the specifics. You know, I know that we're, you know, required or slated to make some decisions for an upcoming Judicial Council meeting, but I do think that because of the significant swings that we're going to end up seeing on this, perhaps further discussion might be helpful. It certainly would be helpful for me and perhaps others as well. So that was one of the things that perhaps you may want to consider. We may want to consider taking back to FMS and having a broader discussion about what we had intended originally, and perhaps going back to some of the policy decisions that we've been relying upon on some of the things that we have been moving forward with. But I think that this may be one of those that we can pull back perhaps and have a additional conversation. That's my thought.
Okay, and I've seen hands up. So I saw Sean Landry, and then Chris, back to you, and then Rebecca. Sean?
Yeah, so I actually support what David Yamasaki is saying. I think the biggest concern that I have as well is the huge swings in applying this methodology. And, you know, if we go back to our core principles of predictability and stability, this sort of blows that out of the water. And I just think we need a little bit more predictability when we see these allocations. So I do think it does deserve another look, maybe by FMS, and a further analysis. And maybe there are different ways to allocate this reduction among the courts. So if that was, I think, what David was saying, I do support that approach.
So I appreciate that. And I'm going to get next to back to Chris, Rebecca, and then Judge Sachs. And that's appropriate. Sean, obviously I've given some thought to this already. We can do that. I mean, FMS members would have to be pretty nimble. We're going to have to meet pretty quickly because we can't put this off past July. But I agree as well. I don't want the effort to be expeditious about this to overcome the need to be fair, transparent, and equitable. But with that said, Chris, back to you. Did you have something to add?
Actually, Judge, I think Rebecca had her hand up before mine. I'd like to hear from her first, too. So,
Rebecca?
Thank you. I also agree that there are some concerns around this as well that need to be fleshed out. And I do think it's more conversation than this particular meeting can contain. And so with that, and without precluding any further conversation, I would like to make the motion that it be sent back to the Funding Methodology Subcommittee for further evaluation, with the caveat that it needs to be prepared for a recommendation for the July Judicial Council meeting.
So when I ask, so for clarification, we say it sent back. You mean all of
item seven.
Item seven, with a specific focus on the civil assessment methodology.
Rebecca, if I might, correct. I think I think we can do it in a way that we peel this particular piece out, because we need to get if that means you're waiting on that, we need to get the balance of the rest of it going to the council and JBBC. I think there's a way we can peel this piece out and continue the rest of the allocations from the TCTF going forward. I don't know, there's a debate about the rest of the methodologies and the basis of the TCTF, but I think there's a way that we can deal with this piece.
I would amend my motion then to peel out the civil assessment piece to go back to the funding methodology subcommittee.
I would second that amendment motion. Yeah.
I think I heard Chris speaking most often. So Rebecca's motion, Chris Rule is seconded that we, I don't want to get too ambitious here, but Rebecca, is your motion to approve item 7, save for sending back the civil assessment methodology piece?
Yes.
Chris, is that your second?
Yes, I would second that.
Okay, so that, and I'm just trying to address an entire agenda item. So what we would do is the motion is to approve item 7, except to, as Zlatko said, peel out the civil assessment piece and those are those specific columns. Just, and I'm on it, so I'm sure everybody's on the same page, but it's columns S, T, and U would be pulled back, would be sent back to FMS as quickly as possible to consider alternatives. The remaining would move forward. Is that fair, Rebecca?
Yes.
And Chris?
Yes.
Okay. Moved and seconded as far as item 7 that we proceed that way. Now, I saw Judge Sachs, you had your hand up. I didn't mean to preclude your question. Is your question taken care of by this motion? Or your
concern? Yes, it is. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Anybody else? So now it's been moved and seconded, open for discussion. Any further discussion on item 7 with the amendment? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion as amended? All right.
I'm sorry, this is Judge Siebert. I thought I was off mute, but I the way this went, I'm a little surprised we're at this point where, and maybe there's no other items that anybody else wanted to discuss, but we started talking about item 7 as a whole. One person raised a concern about one particular item, and it seems like we've sort of cut off any discussion about any other items, and it may be that we didn't cut it off because nobody has any, but sort of got moved into this direction of, let's all vote on this one thing, but we've never even talked about the other portions of item 7. Again,
Judge Siebert, do you have any concerns? I appreciate that. I tried to open it up, but if anybody has, absolutely, Judge Siebert, if anybody has any concerns about anything else in item 7, I tried to make clear I didn't want to just bum rush this through, but if there's any concerns about anything else in item 7, more than happy to chat. It's open for discussion.
Okay, that's all I just want to make sure of is that we didn't, you know, just skip over the rest of 7 and if anybody had anything. I don't personally, but I didn't want to vote on the motion without at least hearing whether anybody has anything on the other item. So I didn't mean to try to run the meeting. That's not what my intention was, but it just felt like it went from one point to boom, next thing we're now, we've moved to the rest of it. Okay,
you're right.
Thank you.
Yep, it did, and I want to step away from that. So does it, and again, Judge Siebert makes a valid point. On item 7, besides the civil assessment piece that has now been peeled off, it's still a pending motion. I haven't called for a vote. Any concerns at all about, I feel like I'm picking a jury and I say to the jury, don't be shy. Tell me if you can't be fair and impartial. Anybody at all? I'm looking for raised hands. I don't see any. I don't hear any comments. Okay, so now I'm going to call for that vote on item 7. Any objection to the motion as amended? And Judge Siebert, thanks again for sort of bringing me back to center. All right, so I'm going to deem item 7 unanimously approved. However, we're peeling off the civil assessment to send it back to FMS within a very quick schedule. FMS members, you're all on here. We'll be in touch with you immediately to try to get that meeting set up. We're going to have to move quick on this, but you guys are good at that. And then it'll necessarily have to come back to TICBAC. So as a whole group, folks, same request. We may have to do this on a very quick setting because we've got a statutory schedule, actually, we have to comply with to get this out by July. Okay. So Now we can go back to our agenda as previously stated, and that takes us right to item one, which is the Community Assistance Recovery and Empowerment Act, otherwise known as the CARE Act allocation. This is funding methodology for this specific allocation. This has also gone through FMS, and we have Don Will to present on this. Don, as always, good to see you.
Thank you, Judge. My name is Don Will from the Judicial Council, and Judge Coughlin, I'm at the San Francisco office battling connectivity issues. If I drop, maybe you'll roll to the next agenda item and I can come back as the caboose for the meeting, but I will
You're never the caboose, Don.
all right. This committee and the council have already in this fiscal year allocated CARE Act funding for the planning funding for cohort one. That was done in January for FY22-23. This item brings you the implementation funding for cohort one in 23-24, as well as planning funding for cohort two in 23-24. Our objective is to allocate 8.7 in hearing related costs for cohort one and an additional 11.3 million in other operating costs across cohort one and cohort two. The hearing costs that are reflected in the governor's budget and the current BCP, which is linked in your materials, were estimated by our standard judgeship model. We have a statewide number of 12,000 cases, and for the first cohort in 23-24, that is prorated to 3,500 petitions and an estimated 2,300 cases. As all cohort one courts know and all of the stakeholders we have reached out to, it is really a lot of uncertainties how accurate the estimates are, what will really happen until courts have been hearing cases for a few months. The methodology we're presenting today and presented to the subcommittee is based on the options you considered for the 22-23 funding, that is straight population, straight filings, workload formula, and workload formula with a base for small courts. This report does not incorporate any additional funding or allocation for Los Angeles. As you may know, there are discussions about Los Angeles beginning implementation in 23-24, but these numbers are based on the governor's budget as it is now. If funding for implementing in Los Angeles is included in the budget, then we propose allocating it using this methodology that you determine on today. Table one shows the allocations for cohort one for hearing costs. We estimated the small court base, or a base for all courts, at 25 cases. That comes to about 40 petitions. 25 cases, a $93,000 base there. The remaining funding, the methodology that was approved for the planning grants was what you see in your fourth block, that's columns K through M. So I draw your attention to that funding allocated by a 25 case base and then by the workload formula. Moving on to the operating costs, our task is to allocate the 11.3 million. Our methodology got a little more complex here. The reason for that being that we assumed, or we proposed assuming, that the cohort one courts should receive operating funding that is allocated consistent with what they would get when all courts are up and running, which is next year. So the way we did that was in table two, we estimated how the funding would be allocated using these different methods for the $17 million that's available in 2024-25 for all courts to be up and running. Then we pulled that funding for the seven cohort one courts out so that there would be no possibility of them being off track with what they would get in 2024-25 or 2025-26 when all courts operating funding is bumped up to $20 million a year. So then after that, we allocated the remainder using the same methodologies across the cohort two courts, and that's presented in tables 3A and 3B. And for this funding line, consistent with the last committee action for the 22-23 funding, we set the base for small courts at approximately 0.5 FTE or 98,000. Just a word on different models being used across the agencies that are implementing the CARE Act. The Department of Finance is doing its budgeting based on straight line population data. The Department of Healthcare Services, for their planning funding, is using a model that blends straight population and a survey of the, or data from a survey of counties' homeless populations. Also a base roughly comparable given the different sizes of the funding of the two groups to the base we have. Their base for their small counties is 0.8% of the total. Our base is 0.5% of the total. The subcommittee did talk about whether there were any other sources of data or models such as the homelessness population survey or other types of filings, and settled again on recommending the workload formula plus a base. Finally, in the subcommittee discussions, they talked about the importance of reallocating, being able to reallocate funding, since we don't know how these estimates will play out in reality. So to reallocate funding, so recommended a mid-year reallocation process, as well as recommending a small reserve that is of about $38,000 that would be available as kind of emergency backstop for courts running through their allocations sooner than they would be able to get relief in a reallocation. I think, Judge, that covers the report as well as a bit of the FMS discussion, and I turn it back to you.
Don, thanks so much, and I appreciate that summary. The recommendations are on, it depends whether you're looking at hard copy or electronic copy. They're hard copy pages 8 and 9 of your materials, and I think it's page 10 and 11 of your electronic materials, 1 through 4 there. And we'll open it up for any questions of Don or others on these recommendations. David, you had your hand up?
Yes, thank you very much, Judge Conklin, and thank you very much, Don. The information that you provided, thank you, is very detailed, and I know that there had been a lot of clarity provided during the meeting of FMS, and a few things, I guess, to note with the recommendations that are located on page 8 of the hard copy materials. One is that it establishes a base level of funding for courts. It identifies a pro rata distribution. But it also, going forward, sets aside a very modest reserve in the event that there's a need to true up some of the amounts of monies that are being allocated to the different participating courts. And with that, I would recommend or be happy to make a motion to approve all of the recommendations 1 through 4, starting on page 8 of the hard copy materials, to page 9, if I may.
All right, so there's a motion to approve those recommendations as set forth. Is there a second?
I'll second it, Judge Siebert.
Judge Siebert, thanks so much. Moved and seconded that the recommendations at hard pages 8 and 9 be approved for consideration. This moves on to JBBC and then to the council, as I understand it. Any further discussion? David, did you have your hand up again, or is that just an echo?
It's user error. My apologies.
It's okay. Welcome to my life. Okay. Moved and seconded those recommendations be approved. Hearing no further discussion, though not wanting to prevent anybody, I want to make sure. I see no hands up. Any opposition to the four recommendations as set forth at page 8 and page 9? Hearing none, with my thanks and all our thanks again to you, Don, all four recommendations are approved. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item 2. This is court-appointed dependency council allocations. We have Audrey Fancy with us from CFCC. This is also gone through. This is for the allocations from TCTF. And Audrey, I will turn it over to you for your presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I am here today to request approval to bring fiscal year 2023-2024 court-appointed dependency council allocations to the July Judicial Council meeting, as shown on attachment 2A and page 20 of the PDF file sent this morning. The recommended allocations are based on the current $186.7 million annual budget for court-appointed juvenile dependency council, consistent with the governor's January budget proposal. Before I provide information on this allocation, for context, I would like to note that Dependency Council is also supported by the federally funded Dependency Representation Program, which provides up to $66 million in federal funds, bringing total funding available up to 99.7% of the current total need. Allocations are based on the methodology adopted in April 2016 with the recommendations of the Small Court Workload Working Group Incorporated as approved by the Council in January 2019. The key factors for each court are a 3-year rolling average of original dependency filings, a 3-year rolling average of number of children in foster care, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics Governmental Salary Index average as modified for other judicial council budget allocations. In addition, consistent with the Council's decision last year to conduct an annual update to the County Council salary, the County Council salary used in this methodology increased by nearly 4.5%, resulting in a total need of $253 million. Once the total need is determined, the methodology then makes two allocation adjustments to address the impacts of the funding methodology on small courts, defined as those with caseloads under 400. Currently, 31 courts meet this definition. First, those small courts with a BLS average under 1.0 are adjusted upward to 1.0. And the smallest courts, defined as those with caseloads under 200, continue to be exempt from reallocation-related budget reductions. This year, 25 courts meet this definition of small, with two new courts falling under a caseload of 200. Those are Santa Cruz and Yuba. However, if the impact of these adjustments would result in a small court being allocated more than 100% of the total need calculated through the workload and funding methodology, the court receives an allocation equal to 100% of the total need. I will note that the updated materials you received includes upward adjustments for three small courts for a total of $20,000 that resulted in downward adjustments for the large courts. And I would be happy to answer any questions or provide further information.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Audrey about this recommendation? As she said, in hard copy, it's set forth at page 17. I think electronically, if my screen is right, it's at page 19. Any questions? I would invite a motion if there's no additional questions.
This is Sean Landry. I'd make the motion.
Sean, thanks so much. Is there a second?
I can second. This is Judge Gabe.
Judge Gabe, thanks so much. Moved and seconded the recommendation as described, be approved by this committee for consideration to the council through JBBC. Any opposition or any further discussion? Pardon me. Any opposition to the motion? Again, Audrey, thanks so much. The recommendations I will deem as the chair unanimously approved for consideration onto the council. Thank you.
Thank you.
This gets us to item number three, which is AB 1058, methodology and allocations. We have Anna Maves from CFCC again with us to consider these allocations for the 1058 Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator programs. I think most of you are familiar with this, but for those that aren't, Anna, fill us in.
Sure. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Hello, members of the committee. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Anna Maves, and I am the AB 1058 Program Manager for the Judicial Council. And I'm here to request approval for funding for the AB 1058 Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator funding for fiscal year 23-24. So just by way of background, the AB 1058 program adjudicates and provides assistance to litigants with child support cases where the local child support agency is involved and consists of two components, the child support commissioner side of the program and the family law facilitator side of the program. In 2015, the Judicial Council created the AB 1058 funding allocation joint subcommittee, which was charged with creating a new workload-based funding methodology for the child support commissioner side of the program and for the family law facilitator side of the program. In January 2019, the Judicial Council approved the new workload-based funding methodology for the child support commissioner program, but deferred creating a new funding methodology for the facilitator side of the program until 21-22. So the currently approved funding methodology for the commissioners uses the same workload and cost structures as to allocate trial court funding, but caps any changes to no more than 5%. And it's reevaluated every 2 years with updated data. And it also provided that the smallest courts or courts that had existing agreements for shared services were left harmless and would continue to receive their current allocation. Then in July 2021, the Judicial Council approved a new population-based methodology for each county for the family law facilitator side of the program. Under this methodology, each court receives minimum funding of $34,000. Which is modeled after the self-help center funding methodology, and that also in this methodology, any changes will be capped at 5%. Also in 2021, the Judicial Council directed the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee to make recommendations about what the minimum funding level should be for the Child Support Commissioner side of the program. And then also asked FNJ to review the implementation of the current methodology to make sure that courts were still able to meet the service levels necessary to perform the functions of the program. So on April 17th of this year, the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee reviewed the options for minimum funding for Cluster 1 courts and recommends to the council that they continue to allocate funding using the current historic methodology, which continues to hold Cluster 1 courts and Cluster 2 courts with an interbranch agreement for shared services harmless to any funding reductions. In making this recommendation, the committee recognized the statutory and contractual requirements of having a child support commissioner program available in every court to hear these cases that are brought by the local child support agencies, and that California must meet federally required time standards for establishing parentage and child support. The committee also recognized that funding Cluster 1 courts greater than their demonstrated workload need would result in providing less funding to other courts and impact their ability to provide those services. They also reviewed the implementation of the current funding methodology and found that courts were able to continue to meet the service levels necessary to provide AB 1058 services to litigants. So I am requesting that the committee approve the updated funding with an updated data as appears in attachment A. And for the child support commissioner side of the program, the updated data, which appears in attachment B for the family law facilitator side of the program, and then approve attachments C1 and C2, which show the total funding allocation for fiscal years 23-24.
Anna, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Anna. So that's hard copy page, the very top of page 21 of your materials, and electronically, I think at page 23, those three recommendations for attachment A, attachment B, and attachment C1 and 2. Opening it up for discussion and questions to Anna. Looking around, making sure. Anna, it looks like you've satisfied everybody as far as questions go. Is there a motion?
Lars should make a motion.
Thank you very much, Judge. Any a second?
Yamasaki sends seconds the recommendations.
Excellent.
And the motion.
Moved and seconded it. Recommendations 1, 2, and 3 for item 3 be approved. Now it's been moved and seconded. Any additional discussion? Hearing none. Any opposition to the motion? And none. So as far as item 3, I'm deeming on behalf of the committee, items 1, 2, and 3 unanimously approved. Anna, thank you so much for your, as always, typical, thorough presentation. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Judge Kaplan.
We're now moving to item 4. This is for another allocation methodology. This is for pretrial allocation and funding floor allocation methodologies. Deidre Benedict is here from Criminal Justice Services. This is to consider this, again, the allocations and funding floor adjustments for pretrial allocations. Deidre?
Thank you, Judge Conklin, and thank you, members of the committee. Yes, you'll find in attachment 4 and the allocation recommended allocations for the 23-24 fiscal year at page 38 of your materials. And Judicial Council Services recommend these allocations for your approval and then subsequent submission to the Judicial Branch Budget Committee and then the Council in July. For those that may not be that aware of the program, it began in the 21 Budget Act under SB 129 that allocated a total of $70 million to the courts for implementation of pretrial programs. The courts received up to 30% of the total allocation, with the other 70% being distributed from the courts to their pretrial service providers. I will note that this request, you'll see the total amount is $68.5 million in total allocations, and that has to do with the amount that is given to the Council for Administration has been moved out of the Budget Act and is in another area. So the amount that is allocated to the trial courts and their partners has not been changed. It just reflects a little differently. This amount is very specific. The allocations are based per SB 129 on the population of 18 to 25 year olds within each county. We review that at a staff level every year for changes in census information. We have also, staff has come to you now for 2 years in a row, this is the third, recommending a funding floor for small courts. We did make a commitment to come back to you and let you know how that was going. This year, we did reach out to each individual funding floor court. There are 23 courts that are impacted and reviewed with them their actual spending and the spending that they anticipated and what their desire would be. We found that 22 of the 23 courts did want to continue the funding floor. One court, Trinity, wanted to decrease their funding floor to $100,000 per year. And we are finding that courts are spending well in anticipation, they're spending what they above the floor that they without the floor, they're spending well in excess of that. So we are comfortable in putting forth this recommendation to continue the funding floor allocation. And we would ask for any questions you might have.
Peter, thanks so much. So when you say there's those floor courts are spending above, you have no concerns that they would either have insufficient money or unable to spend all their money?
There's two questions. One is that we are seeing, and I think this is across the board, as courts are beginning to implement this with their partners, they're running into issues in terms of timing. So we see across the boards that courts in their first year were slow to spend, and this is universal. It's not applied just to small courts. But we are seeing spending increasing, and we are seeing for small courts in particular, that they are spending more than they would have been given without the funding floor. That answers your question.
It does. I appreciate that. Thank you. Any more questions for Deidre on this recommendation? Again, it's at hard copy, the top of page 36 and electronically page 38. Any questions? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Judge, I would move to approve the recommendation. This is Chad.
Chad, thanks so much. Is there a second?
Rule, second.
Chris, thanks so much. Moved and seconded that the recommendations as noted be approved. Now that it's open for discussion, any further discussion? Hearing none and seeing no hands, any opposition to the motion to approve the recommendations as described? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the recommendations are approved. Deidre, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Moving now to item 5, court reporter allocations. Chris Belloli from Budget Management Services is with us. This is for the 23-24 allocation for the $30 million in court reporter funding. We've done a lot of work on this. Obviously, you know, this is an ongoing issue. This doesn't address the shortage of court reporters. That's obviously outside of our realm, but addresses the funding for them. Chris, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Judge Conklin, for that introduction, and thank you, everyone. Nice to see everyone. This is for your consideration, recommended allocation of the $30 million court reporter funding for fiscal year 23-24. Just sort of as a reminder to highlight to this group, this is ongoing funding of $30 million for court reporters. So we received in last fiscal year the $30 million court reporter funding. The allocations were presented to this body for last year's allocations. They were approved and then subsequently approved by the Judicial Council. The allocation methodology is based upon the most recent judicial workload data that is available. In last year's allocations that were approved, that methodology was based upon the 2022 judicial needs assessment results. Methodology or that approach is updated every 2 years. It's a biannual update. And so the methodology and the allocations for 23-24 that are before you today are based upon the same 2022 judicial needs assessment results or judicial workload that was used for the allocations for last year. And so you can see the allocations that are recommended for this next year in, I believe, attachment A in your materials, as well as sort of a description of the methodology that is contained in the report in your materials. So with that, I will go ahead and turn it back over for any questions.
There was a question. You're muted.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
You're muted, Judge.
Okay.
Someone had their hand up, it appears.
Yeah, that was somebody who's probably telling me to unmute myself. So I'm sorry. Long day. The recommendation of page 40, but was there a hand up, Judge Kelly? Did I see your hand up? Nope. Okay.
No, I just say you're on mute. I think it's Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Thank you, Judge. I just wanted to remind everybody that this allocation is based on the same language that we have worked through this last year. And so the same application of the funding and the same critical thinking that you used in this last fiscal year will apply. And so if there are any questions to that, I'm happy to take calls offline on that so that we can talk through that again. That's all I wanted to add.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Any other questions for Chris or for Rebecca for that matter? Is there a motion to approve the recommendation it says described?
Judge Sachs will make a motion.
I think I heard Judge Sachs and then Rebecca seconded.
Yes.
Is that right, Judge Sachs? Did you move?
I did.
Great. And Rebecca, you seconded?
Yes.
Great. Moved and seconded. So now the item's open for discussion. Any further? Following our standard practice, I'll call for any objections or abstentions to the recommendation. Hearing none, the recommendation at page 40 for this item is approved. Chris, as always, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And Judge Conklin, and maybe I missed it, but the I don't know if there was any reference to the $7 million transcripts, that's coming later in September once there's eyes. Chris can just mention that briefly as to why that's not here today, but it will be coming before the committee at a future date.
Yeah, thank you, Zlatko. Yeah, unlike the $30 million court reporter allocation, the methodology used for the $7 million transcript sort of uses the expenditure data that we collect throughout the year. And obviously, because we're not done in the current year's expenditures, we can't use that complete data in terms of the methodology. So I believe we're scheduled to come back to this body with the recommended allocations for the $7 million sometime in the fall after we have complete expenditure data for 22-23 that's used in the methodology for determining that allocation.
Great. Thanks.
Judge Conklin?
Yes, Judge Kamakarian.
You referenced the recommendation. I thought you said page 40. Is it 40 or is it 41?
Well, it's hard to tell electronically. So on the hard copy that I'm looking at, it's at page 41 of 69. And on
me too.
Yeah, okay. So that's what's been approved.
Got it. Thank you.
And he has to be very careful with this because he has a report to submit above. I appreciate that clarification. So now we're moving to our last action item, considering we've already at least dealt with seven, and that's action item six. And this is allocations from the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, the IMF Fund. This is for consideration of revenue. And this comes to us from R&E, a unanimous recommendation from R&E to approve these allocations. So now we're following course. And we have Michael Sun with us to present this. Michael, take it away. You're muted. Well, we can't hear you.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Sorry about that.
You did that on purpose, so I didn't look so dumb for muting myself. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. My name is Mike Sun, and I'm a Senior Budget Analyst in Budget Services. The item six of today's agenda is a recommendation from the Revenue and Expenditures Subcommittee requesting approval of allocations from the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, or IMF, for the upcoming 2023-24 fiscal year. The total request is for $45.2 million, which is approximately $200,000 less than the prior year. The reduction is primarily due to one-time costs as well as expiring budget change proposal funding. Since the R&E subcommittee meeting in April 2023, a reconciliation was performed on the funds held in reserve for the Shriver Civil Council CyPRE funding program. It was determined that actual expenditures previously made by this program were less than what was allocated. The requested allocation for this program is increased by $565,000, which will provide the program with a maximum available resources in 2023-24. I would like to direct your attention to attachment 6A, or page 48 of your materials, which shows the numeric details of this request. This is a summary by program, shown in lines 1 through 33, and the bottom of the page by office, shown in lines 34 through 44. Column D reflects the approved allocations for 2022-23, and columns E through G reflect the recommended allocations for 2023-24. Columns E and F breaks down the 2023-24 requests as approximately $7.6 million for state operations and $37.5 million for local assistance, respectively. The remaining two columns, H and I, shows the change from 2020-23 in dollars and percentages. Next is attachment 6B on pages 49 and 50 of your materials, which provides detailed descriptions for each of the 32 programs outlined in attachment 6A. Lastly, attachment 6C on page 51 of your materials is the fund condition statement. In this document, you will see that based on current revenue estimates, the fund is estimated to be able to sustain the program requests for 2023-24. Approval of the requested allocation will leave an estimated fund balance in the IMF of approximately $26.5 million in 2023-24, reflected under column D, line 25. We have invited office leaders and program representatives to today's meeting should you have questions on any of the specific allocations. The Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee recommendation on page 47 is to approve the 2023-24 allocations from the IMF in the amount of $45.2 million. This concludes our presentation. We're happy to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Michael, thank you so much. So the recommendation, as Michael's noted for us, is at page 47, hard copy, and electronic copy, page 49. Any questions for Michael or staff that's been invited along? I don't see any hands. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation as set forth?
Yes, Judge Conklin, this is David Yamasaki. I would move approval of the recommendation.
All right, and who was about to give that second?
I think that was me, Judge.
Great, Chad, thanks. So moved and seconded the recommendation at page 47 be approved. Now that it's an open motion, it's open for discussion. Any discussion from any member? Hearing none. Any opposition or abstention to the recommendation as described? Michael, thank you so much. The recommendation is unanimously approved and set forward through JBBC to the council. So that's, we've already covered item 7. And just so you know, folks, as we've been presenting the rest of these items, we've already been working in the background to get an FMS meeting set up so we can get back to you as quickly as we can on item 7, but we've already worked through item 7. That will be back to you. Everything's been approved in item 7 again, except for the civil allocation columns that we stripped out to rediscuss and repropose to you as soon as we can. That does give us time, and I'm pleased by that, for our one discussion item, a self-help annual update. And I saw Mr. Armstrong already with us. Nicholas, thanks so much for this. This is our final agenda item, and this is on for discussion, just for an update. And Nicholas from Business Management Services, you're open to present. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Judge. And good afternoon, members of TICBAC. This is simply a brief informational item regarding an update to the rolling 3-year average population data that we obtained from the California Department of Finance. And just for a little context on this item, at its September 2018 business meeting, the Council adopted 3 policy recommendations regarding self-help funding. The first is that staff would update the allocation every 3 years with the latest 3-year average county population data for proportional allocation after baseline funding. The second recommendation is that in between this 3-year update schedule, staff would annually provide an update of the latest 3-year average population data as an informational only item, but not to update the funding allocation itself. This is just to keep courts aware of and up to date with any potential shifts in population and better prepare for the allocation update that does happen every 3 years. And then lastly, we would maintain the current self-help allocation baseline of $34,000 per court and revisit that baseline when the allocation is recalculated. So this item, again, just addresses that second recommendation in providing an informational update to the 3-year population average and the corresponding update to each county's percentage of the state total. So this informational item is found in column C and D of table 1 of the report, which on the electronic version is page 67. And the table also includes the current population averages and percentage of state total used for proportional allocation in columns A and B. And this will continue to be used up until fiscal year 24-25, which is the next scheduled allocation update. So that concludes the briefing. And if there's any questions, I can take them at this time.
Nicholas, thank you very much. Any questions for Nicholas about this update? Okay. Again, Nicholas, with our appreciation, thanks so much. That was very helpful. So, folks, we were slotted till 2:00. This might give you a little bit of time to grab a bite before you begin your afternoon. For anybody looking in from the outside, I know, save item 7, these items were moved through pretty expeditiously. But I assure you, and this committee assures you, that the significant amount of work that goes into this I think, testifies to how they were addressed by this committee. I wish I could thank everybody, but I can't. So if I start thanking them, I'll leave people out. Though obviously John's, Lacko, Rebecca, I mean, Brandy and Rebecca, I should, as always. But so many hands go into putting all these numbers together. I know they're not perfect, folks. And at times we step back and make some minor adjustments. I think the way we treated item 7 is a good example of this committee's recognition that sometimes we need to stop and take a relook. The fact that David Yamasaki, even from Orange County, who had most to gain from this, recommends that we go back and take a look at it, exemplifies how this committee continues to look at things and say it's not the good of my court, but the goods of court statewide. So yeah, I'm on my soapbox. I'll get off my soapbox, but you guys do a great job. And I really appreciate it, staff and committee members as well. It's a joy. So we'll get back to you as soon as we can with those updated from FMS related to the civil assessment updates. I'm hoping we have to get that done, but we'll send an update to you and scheduling as quickly as we can and move forward. So anything else for the good of the order? All right. Judge Larch, thanks again for putting your jacket on display, as my helmet is. So I'll conclude this as we always do. Go Dodgers, and thanks, everybody. Have a pleasant afternoon. We'll be back in touch. Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.